Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th of March, Anno Domini 2014. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. We're doing Soundbites. And here is here's our first news item. In February, we saw the usual small movements in the browser market. More significantly, however, we didn't see any significant movements in the operating system market. For the second month in a row, Windows 8.x's share is basically unaltered, and so is Windows XP's. For the second month in a row, Windows 8.x's aggregate market share has barely moved. It was up less than a tenth of a point in January. It's up just a tenth of a point in February. Windows 8 still outnumbers Windows 8.1, too, though the story there is also a little happier for Redmond, with 8.1 growing by a third of a point and 8.0 falling by a quarter of a point, indicating that Windows users are installing the free 8.1 update, albeit slowly. Microsoft's forthcoming update to Windows 8.1 may improve the take-up of 8.1, as it will improve Internet Explorer 11's legacy compatibility, something that prevented some organizations from updating at 8.0 with Internet Explorer 10. That's about the best can be said for it. Windows 8 isn't growing, and just as significantly, Windows XP isn't going away. Microsoft will soon start telling XP users via pop-ups that their operating system is about to lose support, and there are rumors that the company may produce a low or no-cost Windows version that might encourage reluctant upgraders to switch. But it's clear that there's a problem here. It's not even as simple as Windows 8 alienating buyers. Windows 7 isn't seeing any growth either, as it fell by about two-tenths of a point in February. Microsoft plainly hasn't been able to reach a vast number of XP users to explain to them both what is going to happen and why it is important. And while Firefox and Chrome will both be supported on Windows XP beyond the end of life, the substantial number of people using Internet Explorer 6 to 8 is strongly suggestive that many of those Windows XP users are going to be using not just an unsupported operating system, but an unsupported browser too, and in both cases, a product that is very, very unsecured. Exploitation of these people is inevitable, and it's hard to see this ending well. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is 29% of you are still using Windows XP. Your choices are XP forever, it's the cat's pajamas, 23 Skidoo. And I think it would be too expensive and difficult. And I'm just too lazy. And I'm just too cheap. And I'm using a real operating system, thanks. So far, 29 of you have voted, and I'm using a real operating system is well ahead with 48% of the vote. But I know you'll have more to say. So head on over to the forums. If you look down the right-hand column, you'll see fascinating stuff. Under that, the first choice is the forums. And if you go in there, you will find the forum for the poll. And the entry is 8 March 14, 29% of you are still using Windows XP. And give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. The worst part about this, the real problem with all of this, is that Microsoft has essentially a single code base for all versions of Windows. There obviously are fixes and changes to the UI, but the underlying operating system is essentially unchanged, still uses the same kernel. And as they find holes in that, and as they patch them for 7 and 8, they are not going to patch them for XP.
And one of the amazing things is after 12 years, they are still finding holes in XP.
Yep. Well, there's 100 gazillion lines of code by 700 million programmers. I'm not surprised at that. But they are patching them. We're not saying they aren't patching them, but the problem is not that there are holes. It's that in XP they will not be patched. And antivirus software makers, as time goes on, will stop trying to deal with holes in a 16-year-old operating system. They're just not going to do it anymore. If I'm writing a piece of code and I want it to be as fast as possible and as small as possible so that people don't get bored with waiting for an antivirus program to run, anything that's been closed off in the operating system itself, I'm going to take out of my program because it's not needed anymore. There's no point in carrying it around, except for those people still using XP. And of course, as time goes on, there will be more and more of those holes that are unpatched and unprotected in XP. And it's going to be a real issue for so many, many people.
One of the things I read that was interesting, I haven't checked if it was true or not, the Windows 8.1 update does not come from Windows Update. It comes from the Microsoft App Store. Is that right?
I don't know that.
They were talking about it on a podcast I listened to, and one guy was saying he went to Windows Update, and there was nothing there. It didn't tell him 8.1 was out.
That's the way Apple's doing it now, too, right?
Depends on what point update you're talking about.
Well,
you'd think 8.1 would have come from Windows Update.
No,
so it's not
so.
It's not Service Pack 1. That's the problem. It's point 1.
Right, right, right.
Service Pack 1 probably would have come with from Windows Update.
Right. But yeah, so you really have to be a little careful. You have to make sure your system is up to date. And honestly, 30 days from today, no more support for Windows XP. You know what? Get over it. I'm sorry. That's just the way life is. Microsoft is not going to support you. You can move to Windows 8.1. You can buy a Mac. You can put Linux on that old machine. You can buy a Chromebook. But Windows XP is a done deal. It's over.
And also Office 2003 support ending as well. You should have been up to 2007 and what was it now? 2013 now. Yeah.
Yeah. So or move to LibreOffice or one of those. But again, that old stuff just isn't going to be supported anymore.
Which doesn't mean it will quit working. It'll keep working, and the bad guys will still be able to get into it. It's because Microsoft is not releasing new patches to fix security problems.
Right, because it's so old. Microsoft Office 2003 is 11 years old.
Yep.
You know, Microsoft doesn't care about it anymore.
Well, you remember all the Y2K problem. A lot of people who knew COBOL got jobs again because that's what a lot of those old programs were written in. You'd think Microsoft would just hire some old XP programmers.
right.
or somebody else would come along and take over the code base. Oh, we'll do it for you.
Well, one of the other things, though, that there's been rumors going around that a lot of folks are waiting for Windows 9 now because they're under great pressure to bring that out because
most
companies don't want to go to 8.
Well, and the biggest difference in 8 is it's basically designed for a touch interface.
Yeah, it's a tablet.
And it looks so different from people, they don't want to change. Will Windows 9 go back to the desktop interface? I kind of doubt it.
More importantly, will Windows 9 run on your 15-year-old hardware?
Right.
You know, one of the reasons a lot of people don't want to upgrade is because they can't afford to buy a whole new computer now.
Right.
They're still not going to be able to afford a whole new computer when 9 comes out.
Then the problem that we see a lot, too, is you look at the TV ads and you can go to the big box store and buy a $299 computer. And it'll break in a year and you throw it away and buy another one.
Right.
Because it was only $299. But people aren't used to that. They expect their computers to last 10 years. We had a customer this week. She had an 8-year-old computer and was upset that it was broken and vintage, and we'd have a hard time finding parts for it. I expect my cars to last for 20 years. Why can't my computer last for 20 years?
It can. You aren't going to have any support.
Right, and you can't run any. And her problem is she can't get onto websites because her browser is so old. The rest of the world has passed you by, And unfortunately, that in computer terms, that's a long time. We talk about seven human years for every dog year. It's about 25 computer years for every human year.
Yeah.
So the fact that you have a 100-year-old computer is amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Before we go to the phones, let me remind you that tonight we spring ahead, which means tomorrow is National Shut Up, I'm Grumpy and Tired Day, as we lose our, because we're all too stupid to go to bed earlier.
Where did that slide in?
Just a reminder. Most of us won't care because
justification.
Every phone, every clock, every time-telling device we own will auto-update.
Because everything is connected to the internet these
except
days.
Maybe the clock in your bathroom.
Yeah, the clock radio. The car, it's amazing, the cars don't update.
And the cars
yet.
Don't update yeah. themselves.
But you don't notice that until Monday morning when you're late for work.
Well, last week at church, they were sitting there trying to stress to everybody.
Yep.
More and more folks go to get up for church.
Yep.
And, they're late.
I guess being an hour early is better than an hour late.
Right. But that's just it because, in the fall, it's a real problem because you don't set, the one clock you forget to set is your alarm clock.
Yeah.
So you get up in the fall and here you'll be an hour early. You're rushing to church and you're actually early.
Well, this time,
park in a decent place and everything else. So that'll be all right.
Also, next week is Pi Day.
That's right. Next week,
314. So
no, it'll be different because if your mass is say at 9 o'clock, and we're springing forward, if you get up to leave for church
at 9, it's really 10, and you've missed it.
They're going to be coming out of church. You're ready to go in.
You're right. I don't do time, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't do that.
I don't do time, man.
See, you're.
Does anybody really know what time it is?
Does anybody really care?
Care.
Yeah, we're old.
We are. He's not,
but he knows that. Probably his parents told him about it. Who knows? All right, we're going to the phones now. John from Greece has been very patient on the line. Welcome, John. What's up?
Hey, I got a question for you guys about viruses. Why is it when I sit there watching Microsoft Essentials under my Windows 7 system, takes 4 hours to not find anything that your Spy Hunter 4 that I downloaded from the soundbites, was it your Tango?
Yeah.
That you guys came up with? Found it in like 10 minutes, 163 threats.
Well, they find different things, you see. Windows 7, Microsoft Essentials is looking for viruses. Spy Hunter is looking for other types of malware. Of bad stuff in your computer. That's why we tell people you can't just run one thing. You should run something like the anti-spyware stuff regularly as well, because many virus programs, like Microsoft's, only actually deal with viruses. The hint is right there in the name. It's a virus. It's an antivirus program, not an anti-spyware or Trojan or anything else program.
Okay, what is this xpyro.bc? According to your Spy Hunter, it's got like yellow, orange, red, like a high real threat to my system.
Sure.
Okay, my question is, when it says fixed threats, then it says, you have to pay us $39.95 to fix these things. It's like you're being blackmailed to find all the bad things I found.
Well,
my question is, if I use my card to order this thing and download it to my system, meanwhile the bugs that are still there looking for all these personal information now have my credit card number.
Right. Here's the thing that I have to stop and say though, I don't recognize the name Spy Hunter.
It's not one of our common programs.
Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware are the two we recommend. I don't know.
That both have free components and will freely remove the spyware. It looks like Spy Hunter is a legitimate program. They have a big thing on their website, which is common these days. You can download a free scanner. But to actually remove the problems, you have to pay.
Right. Whereas Malware Bytes, and of course, With Spy Hunter, which I don't know and have never recommended, it may well be that it's not, they're not real threats. But what I would do is go back to the Security Tango site, look at the menu across the top. Under Windows Software, there's Antivirus, Anti-Malware, and Firewalls. You've already got an antivirus program, although I personally would replace it with Avast or AVG. And then go to the anti-malware part and select either Malwarebytes or Super Anti-Spyware, or in fact, you can download both. As long as you're not running them simultaneously, you can have as much of that stuff on your computer as you want.
And they both also have commercial versions that you can pay for if you want to, but they do have free home use versions.
So be very careful which one you download.
And be careful of free trials, because that means that's the pay version that's going to expire, and then you need to pay for it.
Right.
Yeah, when you least expect it.
Right, right.
By the way, I'm under your five newest users, and the third one down from the top.
Oh, excellent.
You probably remember me from your computer thing when I was trying to use radio, amateur radio, to connect during the middle of a thunderstorm. You remember, Dave?
Oh, we remember that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
We remember that.
I made a connection across the state in the middle of a thunderstorm using amateur radio packet radio. And this is normal.
Yeah. Cool.
Anyway, about your time thing that you brought up.
Yeah.
There are some radio or clocks out there that seem to pick up, it's not adjusted yet. It has to wait to the real official date, which is not recognized by some systems.
Well, especially because the daylight savings time date changed.
Yeah,
some of the older
Congress critters interfering with our normal lives, right?
Yeah. So some of the older devices who used to have the dates programmed into them are now wrong because the date changed.
Right.
As soon as you change it, and then the next night we're handing out from whatever sources.
Yep.
Right. Listen, we got to take a break. I'm sorry. We got to take a break. Thanks for calling. We're going to take a short break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 22 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 28 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Dave from Canandaigua, New York, on the line. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Well, one thing I looked on your website, and we were talking about last week, a new cache for accounting. Well, I've been trying to make the jump from XP over to Windows 7, and I've been using Quicken 2001, and that will not run under Windows 7. So I went to Quicken's website. You can download Quicken 2003, and it's free if you want to stay with Quicken.
Interesting.
That's good to know, except that...
It's still old, but you're not forced into spending money. And if you're used to Quicken, then I run my business on it. So.
Right. But I would worry about what I'm missing. You know, what's changed in the last 11 years?
Probably a lot, but you know, I'm going from 2001 up to 2003, so I'm not losing anything by doing that. I'm staving off being forced to spend money on a new complicated version of Quicken.
No, but my point is, since you are using an 11-year-old version of Quicken, are you missing? Is it missing some things that laws have changed, stuff, assumptions that it makes don't exist anymore, that sort of fare?
Well, not in my experience. I don't see any need to jump up to anything.
Yeah.
It works fine for what I've been doing.
Well, that's all right. I'm just saying you need to think of that.
You couldn't use it for tax reports because it may not give you the right information.
Right.
Well, my a tax program does that for me instead, so I just export what I need. But anyway, that was just something in case you were looking to avoid.
Do you know where that was? Because I can't find it on Intuit's website anymore.
Yeah, I did a Google search, and when you start, you search for Quicken 2001 install on Windows 7 X64. I think that was sort of the, and it'll take you to a page where they describe what happens And then at the bottom of the page, there's a link down there. You can download 2003.
Oh.
All right. We'll see if we can find it.
And it's right off Quicken's website?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's all right then.
Yeah.
I was a little worried there for a minute.
Yeah, because that's...
No, it's not pirateware or anything like that, so...
Well, more importantly, it would be fakeware, right?
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was just my tip for the day. I have a question, and in trying to move over to Windows 7, I'm going to have to abandon Outlook Express. And when I've tried a bunch of different programs, and when I try and move my address book, things don't usually go 100% to my satisfaction. And what I've noticed in all the programs is that if I had an LDAP server, that I wouldn't, you know, I can do whatever I want, and I'd still have that pile of data sitting there undisturbed. But I don't really want to install an LDAP server, so I'm wondering if there's some product that would emulate it, something to that effect, so that no matter what mail program I'm running, I can tap into whatever database and get what I want.
Usually people use Google for that, because Google runs an LDAP server for contacts, and so you sync your contacts up to Google, and then they can sync down to any other contact program.
Right.
Locally on your computer, most contact programs can export as a text file. Some of the better ones can export as a vCard, which is the internet standard for address book cards that most other address programs can import as well.
LDAP, by the way, stands for Lightweight Directory Access Protocol. Mm-hmm. It's a way to... as you're saying, it's a way to keep your addresses in one place in essentially a database and be able to access them from multiple different locations, from multiple different computers, et cetera, et cetera. And Steve is right. Google Contacts does much the same thing.
So I might be able to export to there and then import it into whatever program I decide on. Because an LDAP server is more trouble than I want to actually go to on my system. So,
yep.
So Google Contacts?
Well, in Google Contacts, one of the things that you can do, and I don't know if this is only available for enterprise users. I don't know that off the top of my head. But one thing you can do is share contacts. And in shared, when you share contacts, it's essentially LDAP. There's an actual LDAP shared contacts page.
Okay.
And there is...
even though you're just sharing with yourself.
Right.
Right.
Well, I'll see what I can figure out.
Okay.
Thanks.
LDAP is a pretty neat thing, but it's also not a simple thing.
Yeah. And it used to be you'd get a Microsoft Exchange server or run your own server to be able to handle your mail and contacts and calendars, especially if you were syncing calendars in even a small business.
Right.
But Exchange is expensive, and so most of us have gone to Google now to do that.
Right.
Google used to give you 100 email accounts for free in a domain, and then it was 10, and now it's not. They don't do free domains anymore. So right. Each person can get a free...
But domains aren't expensive, either.
No, they're not. And the thing that is, too, you know, sharing calendars...
Yep. So you get one...
And setting up appointments and everything else is just so much easier. And then, like Nick has talked about, Google Plus, getting into the groups.
Yep.
Yeah. You get one Google account for your company, and everyone logs into that for the shared calendars and shared contacts.
Yeah.
Right. You can do that, or you can pay, what is it, $50 a year per person?
Per person per user. Yeah.
So if you've got 10, 15 people, it's $500, $700 a year. Yep. Not a lot of money, really, for a company.
Exactly.
For a company.
It's cheap.
Right.
Then to maintain their own?
Right.
Yeah. And I think I found that page at Intuit that the caller was talking about.
Well, that's interesting. Who's this? Yeah, I knew that. I thought I... Apologize. I thought I had dismissed this.
You dialed a fax machine. No. but there's a page on Intuit's website. If you are converting from an old version of Quicken to the current version 2014, which starts at $40, so it's not really that expensive to get into the current version of Quicken, but that's still more expensive than the free GNU cache. If you have an old version of Quicken, you may need to use an intermediate version to convert from. So say you're using Quicken version 1, you'll have to convert to 6, and then you'll have to convert to 2004 in order to convert to 2014.
Right.
So the bottom line is don't wait so long between versions. But on that website, they have the option to download Quicken 99, Quicken 2000, or Quicken 2003 to use as a conversion tool. It doesn't say if it's a demo or a trial or anything, but I'd almost be a little worried that it will expire and quit working. But probably. It doesn't say it's a trial. It says download this for handy use to convert your new version. Probably because it is an 11-year-old program, they don't mind.
Right.
And they still want to keep those users.
Right. And so once you get converted to 2003...
Quicken is so easy to use. I mean,
yeah,
I love it.
It's kind of like Microsoft Office. Everyone uses it because everyone uses it. It's what we're used to, so that's typically what you get at home because that's what you're used to at work. And businesses get it at work because Microsoft is
well, it's setting everything up automatically. You know, you can set up reminders for the whole month, and as I've told you guys back in the day when Lori was the financial person. She took care of all the books and everything else, and once she saw how I used to balance a checkbook, her eyes used to roll back in the back of her head and say, "How the heck did you ever balance?" Easy. At the end of the year, I just had extra money. Never bounced a check. So I wound up, after she passed away, I wound up moving over to Quicken. And oh, it's so darn easy. Just put it in. It does it. Set up the reminders. And for somebody that doesn't even come from a financial background, the program is so easy, and they walk you through every step of it.
Right.
It's a no-brainer.
Right. Right. It's a good product.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joanne from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's up?
I'm sure this will be very easy for you, but not for me. Along the bottom of your monitor, there's usually 5 or 10 icons that are along there. Well, somehow those icons have moved to the side, on the right-hand side. How do I get it back to the bottom?
Oh, a lot of people have this problem.
Toolbar.
The toolbar has moved off to the side. What you want to do is that if you look, you'll see that toolbar extends down the whole left side.
Yes.
You grab it in any blank part in the middle.
Okay.
Click and hold your mouse button and then drag the whole thing back down to the bottom and it'll snap in there and then you let go.
It's in there.
There you go.
Thank you. That was good.
Yep.
Our pleasure.
Now, wait a minute. With that caveat, now here's the thing. See, you heard if you were listening to the Polka Guys, you knew they were starting the pledge drive.
Oh yes, I have my card right.
Oh, you there? You go. All right, you're in our good standings.
I don't care what Dave says about you. We like you here.
That's good.
I won't blank your call out next time you call.
Okay.
Yeah, we're actually not pledging until next week.
Right, we start next week.
So get your shekels in order, and we'll be here next week for you.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you,
Joanne.
Thanks a lot.
And that is a pretty common problem that people accidentally run into. You're going to click one of those buttons in the taskbar, and you accidentally drag rather than click, and it moves it. We see that a lot in the Mac world with the dock at the bottom of the screen has all your icons in it. And if you click and drag an icon, you can drag it off the dock, and then it disappears.
And it disappears. You haven't uninstalled it, you've just removed the icon from the dock,
right.
but it's not there anymore. People think it's gone.
It's gone, right. And it disappears in a little puff of smoke, so when kids find that happen, they take everything out of the dock.
Because it's so cool.
So cool. Yeah. And what Apple's actually done in later versions of the OS, you now have to drag it farther off the dock. You have to go like 2 or 3 inches now before it will actually remove it from the dock.
Can you lock the dock?
As a non-administrator, a standard user, the administrator can lock the dock of a standard user.
Right, right.
But almost everyone runs as administrator.
And they shouldn't.
And
they should never do that on any operating system. All right, listen, we're going to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and we continue, whether any of us like it or not, to be sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I do want to apologize to everybody for my phone going off. I have a program called Hush, which is a great little application for Android phones. You take your phone out and you put the volume all the way down, and a little window pops up and says, how long do you want it off for?
Cool.
So that at the end of that time, whatever you set, it automatically comes back on. So it's not like 2 days later and you wonder why nobody's called.
H-U-S?
I hate that when I go to the movies and turn my phone off. I always forget to turn it back on.
How is it spelled? H-U-S?
S-H-U-S-H. Shush.
Shush. Okay.
And I said it wrong because I'm an idiot. But it's set right now, and so it should be fine.
I got to go back for second that we were talking about files and everything else. I've got a certain young lady who loves to click on files. And folks will do this. They click on a bunch of files, and then they right-click on it, and they just sort of move it a little bit.
And suddenly you've got a duplicate?
You got all these extras. And they do that a couple times. Because, no, it didn't go where they want it. And they got all these duplicates. And it's like, how come I got so many extra copies? Because you make copies of it. No, I didn't. No, there's something wrong with the computer.
Right.
And that's where
somebody did.
And that's where I keep going back to Picnic.
Yep.
And for folks that don't know what Picnic stands for, it stands for problem in chair, not in computer.
Right.
So usually I tell her that and get slapped.
Yep, I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
For Picnic.
I try to tell people never put anything in the desktop except folders.
Well, she's doing this within a folder.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so the folder, it gets so many in there.
Yeah. But you should know, the more stuff you put on the desktop, the slower your computer will run. Because all of that stuff lives right in memory and takes memory away from everything else.
Unbelievable.
If you put it in a folder, even if that folder is on your desktop, you're much better off because then it's not in memory all the time and you have that memory to do other things with, and so your machine will run a little faster.
I had one client had a 21-inch screen. You turned it on and there was not one white space.
Yep.
That you could not get and squeeze another icon on it. He goes, well, I got them sorted all in columns. But it's getting awful slow. I go, you think?
We had a customer this week where, coincidentally, he was running Quicken for Windows on his Mac. And when I opened Parallels, all I could see on his desktop were Quicken files, file after file after file. So, you know, sort by list, 536 copies.
Wow.
Because his backup folder was set to the desktop.
Yep.
And so which is good to have a backup, but don't put it on the desktop. So every time he quit Quicken, it backed it up to the desktop. So I don't know how he keeps track of his main file versus his backup files. And we see that all the time because Quicken will make it so. Say your file is called file. So the first backup is 1-backup. And then the second one is 2-file, 3-file. Well, then if you open one of those backup files, then it's 1-1-backup.
Right.
2-1-. And we see people opening backup files inadvertently all the time because their backup folder is the same as their main data folder.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Listen, I just heard you guys say, and the last thing you said before the break was you should never be the administrator on your computer.
Right.
Why is that?
Because the administrator has godlike power on a computer. So and we are human. So if you wanted to, you could erase all your Windows files, the boot files. All of that stuff.
Application files.
Right, which we sometimes do because we're thinking of other things. We're just human. If you are not running as administrator, you can't make those kinds of mistakes. In addition...
I'm an Apple guy.
Same thing.
All right.
Same thing.
The first account you create on Apple or Windows is the administrator account, because you need to have an administrator to do administrative functions like install software, remove software, system updates. But then what you should do is make a standard user that you do all your work in. And only when you need to do administrative functions, you log into that administrator user. And in fact, having two separate users is a great diagnostic tool, because when something goes wrong with your main user, you have another user to log into.
Right. In addition, if you do get a virus and you are running as administrator, that virus is now the administrator and can get at anything.
And there have been Mac malware programs. There was the fake flash update. Because most people run as administrator, the fake update could download and run because you already were the administrator.
So it's a little bit of a pain in the neck, because if you're installing new software, you have to log out and log on as a new person. Ooh, boo-hoo.
Yeah.
And how many people install new software? How often?
Right.
Okay.
The average user.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I never even knew that, and I've been running as administrator for, forever.
Yeah, no.
We do find it common in families that mom, dad, and each of the kids would have their own account to keep their own mail and their own stuff separately, and especially give your kids standard users. And, in fact, on the Mac, there's an even lower user called a managed user, and you can impose time limits on how long they can use the computer, how many hours a day they can use the computer, what programs they're allowed to use.
Right.
Have those parental controls built into that user.
Awesome. Okay. Well, that's fantastic. I always depend on you guys.
You always
clean me up.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Bye. And, of course, we know we'll hear from Mike next week when we're pledging.
Yeah. Windows kind of does that a little bit differently, because there is an administrator user beyond the user you create, because when you boot into safe mode, you see that administrator separate from the username you created. But that first user you create when you set up Windows is still an administrator.
Right, and you should always call it something like administrator or root or whatever, so that you don't confuse it with everything else you do. All right, our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. I want to talk to you about the latest edition of Avast antivirus. I ran it for the latest edition, ran it for quite a while, and everything was so slow. Finally, I realized I needed to go into Firefox and turn off all their stuff. I forget whether it was add-ons or extensions or what the hell it was. But anyway, that definitely helped me speed up the loading of the pages.
Right.
And I don't know if people know that. I mean, I went months after they started doing that, because they did not originally have extensions or add-ons or whatever in the browsers.
Yeah, because browsers are where a lot of the threats are coming from these days. So it's scanning every file that comes in from the browser, which unfortunately slows it down. And if it slows it down too much, people are going to turn it off, and then it's not worth anything.
But there is a web shield and there is a mail shield, but I'm not talking about those. I am talking about other things that are in that when you go to add-ons or options, I forget what it is in the tools section of the browser,
add-ons,
you find these things that are there, a bunch of different things.
Oh, yeah. All of them do. In Chrome, they're called extensions. Internet Explorer has them as well. Safari has them. You can add in pieces and parts. They're anything from little tiny things to help you do something to whole entire programs of their own. And yes, they can. Many of them update in the background regularly by themselves. Many of them have their own sets of files that they have. And if Avast is running while those are updating or while those are changing their files, of course, Avast will check those before it lets them through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it. You're absolutely right. Those kinds of things can be an issue.
Now, what I've decided to do was turn off Mail Shield, because I'm assuming my mail program checks for antiviruses. It's a local Blue Frog. It's called Blue Frog.
Yeah, the mail servers usually check for viruses.
Yeah, that's what I mean,
yeah.
I guess.
But
Well, don't assume that. I would go look on their website and assure myself of that.
I know that it was delaying my sending outgoing messages and incoming messages like quite a bit, so I just didn't want to deal with that. And I got, if there's time, may I ask you one more question?
Sure, go.
Java. I think you have been saying we should not be using Java. But then what do you do with the video, like the short news clips from TV channels or whatever things that you
no,
have
I, that's,
or Flash?
I get that.
Yeah, that's almost never Java. That's usually Flash. But Flash is another. So Java and Flash are two common web extensions to do things in websites. But they're because they're so common, they're targets for the bad guys. Most people don't need Java unless you're running a program like LibreOffice or OpenOffice.
Oh.
And Flash has been replaced by H.264 and HTML5. So many websites will use the newer technology if you don't have Flash installed. But we are seeing that a lot of sites still require Flash and don't work without it.
Well, you get something like YouTube, and one of the things they have said is that all the newer, anything you upload from now on will be in HTML5. But certainly they have billions of older videos, yeah, which are still in Flash.
All right, so Java I could turn off, and Flash I may or may not need. And
right.
I could turn that off and just use it when I need it or something.
Right, and some of the newer browsers, I know Safari 6 or 7, the latest version of Safari, will automatically sleep Flash if you're not using it, and Java as well. And you just have to make sure you keep them up to date when updates come out to fix problems. But the bad guys put out fake update notices, and that's where it becomes tricky, knowing a real update from a fake update. So if you get an update notice for Flash, don't believe the message. Go to Adobe.com and check for yourself.
I see.
Right. The other thing to do is, I know you don't want to run extensions anymore, but add-ons for Firefox, but you might want to look at a Flash blocker. There are several out there, and what they do is they put up instead of the screen you would normally see, they put up a little window with a click in it. And if you click on it, then the video plays. But if you don't click on it, it doesn't.
Okay.
And it's a Flash blocker, and I love those because almost nothing annoys me more than loading a web page and suddenly there's junk playing on it.
Good point.
If I don't want to play it, I don't want to play it. If I want to play it, I'll click on it and play it. Don't assume I want to see your commercial. Don't assume I want to see your news thing. Don't assume.
Especially if you open a couple of tabs and suddenly you've got three different videos playing.
Exactly.
Well, that totally annoys me, and I haven't known what to do about it. So your suggestion is excellent. I really like that.
Thank you.
It makes me crazy.
Thank you. Makes me crazier.
thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. We don't. I hate what they call drive-by video, where you just start a page and bang, all of a sudden video is playing. I just don't care for it. It doesn't. I don't understand why. I understand why they do it. I mean, I really do. It's stickiness. It's a way to keep you on their page. Something is playing, that's great, blah, blah, blah. Yep. But if I'm out somewhere and I'm using my cell phone to look at stuff, suddenly I'm wasting my download, my data caps with that nonsense. And I just don't care for it. All right, we're going to go back to the phones, but we may only get the question in before we have to go. Our next caller is Jerry from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's up?
I had an XP tower, and on that I had hooked in an old HP 1200. Well, it wasn't old when I hooked it up, but that was running fine, and I went in to do one of my normal housekeeping things. It turned out when I went to delete one of my temporary files, I included one of the files that I needed to boot up, and so I couldn't get into Windows. So what I said was, I'm now going to use my Inspiron laptop, and I'm going to just kind of run everything. I'm going to hook in my modem or my monitor. I'm going to hook in my printer. So what I did into my Windows 7 laptop is I downloaded the HP driver for the 1200 printer, which has been out of date since maybe since 2004, 2005. I can get the thing to print every once in a while, and it's almost like the first time I boot up the laptop and I go to print something, it's fine. The next time I go to print a file in that session, I will get an error trying to print the second document. And it doesn't matter whether it's an Excel spreadsheet or a Word document or a PDF file. It will, for some reason, block me.
Yeah. Here's
And then what I got to do is I got to go, in my words, seppuku and do a cold start and redo the whole freaking thing.
All right. I have a real simple answer for you, but now I don't have time. So hang on. we're going to take a fairly long break here, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And when we do, we'll give you the answer to your question. We're going to take that quick break. You've spent an entire hour, some might say wasted, an entire hour listening to us, but you get a chance to do it again. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. Jerry from Miranda Coit is going to patiently wait on the line. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You know this show. Some of you even love this show. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC's
longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I'm hearing music, and I don't know where it's coming from.
Oh, it's coming from that video up on your other screen there, Dave.
Yeah.
A drive-by video just started.
I gotta.
Dave's only got six screens in front of him.
I gotta tell folks one thing here. When you call, I don't mean to be rude, but I'm also trying to run a board, control a show. And when I tell you folks, I got to put you on hold, I'm not like trying to say, be nasty. It's just the way it is. So don't yell at me. No, 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 no. Yes, 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 yes. Because you know what? I control the board and I've got to get things done and run. I don't mean to be a snob or anything else. It's just we got a lot to do here.
Radio is time sensitive and you got to do the things you got to do.
There's certain things I have to do and hit at certain marks. So. It's just the way it is.
It's called a hard out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I've got to hit certain marks in that. So, and when folks call and I try to be polite.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones. We've got Jerry from Miranda Coit waiting on the line. And we have an answer to your question, Jerry. And the problem is you're running a driver that doesn't have any idea what Windows XP is, Windows 7 is about and how it works. Are you still there, Jerry?
Well, I felt like I was one of those segments where you had to wake up the old man. Remember how you'd go and you'd have this thing where you'd wake somebody up and he'd all of a sudden start prattling on about something. And I'm still here.
Yeah, good. All right. So here's the thing. Windows could probably run a generic HP for your 12 driver for your 1200. Windows 7 does have generic HP drivers built in. But you've downloaded a driver first. HP drivers are lousy junk anyway. But secondly, you're running one from 10 years ago, which doesn't have any idea about the new architectures in Windows 7.
Excuse me, but if I went to the HP website and downloaded a PCL5 or a PCL6 or a PostScript driver for 1200, wouldn't they be updated?
No, not necessarily. They're static.
For each operating system.
Right.
So you have to make sure you pick the right operating system during the download.
And I thought I did. But.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't sound like it because of the problems you're having.
And if they don't have the driver for your specific operating system, then HP is not supporting that drive, that printer anymore. So one of the tricks is you have to make sure you get the 32-bit driver or the 64-bit driver, depending on exactly which OS you're using. So the Windows 7 32-bit driver is completely different from the Windows 7 64-bit driver. So you might have downloaded the wrong bit depth rather than the wrong OS level.
Right.
Okay.
There are some third-party drivers.
If I downloaded the right 64-bit driver for Windows 7, the thing should work every time?
What we're saying is, if there is, in fact, a 64-bit driver from HP for the HP 1200, then it should work correctly every time.
Okay.
Is it a 1200 nothing, or are there letters after the 1200? Because that makes a difference, too.
I was going to say SC, but I can't remember now.
Well, but that also makes a difference. You can't just download the generic 1200 driver.
Especially if you have an SE, because that's a different driver than the 1200.
Right.
And again, I can't remember.
My point is, when you get home, you might want to remove that driver entirely and see if the thing will run by itself. If it does everything you need it to do just with the generic driver that Windows 7 has, then you're ahead of the game anyway. And if it doesn't, then go down and make sure that you download the correct bit depth, the correct printer, and the correct subgroup for that printer.
I'm just trying to think is it simple to remove the driver?
Yes, you just go into the drivers.
If it shows up.
And if it shows up, and it should because he installed it separately,
yeah.
just add remove.
Or there may be an uninstall. There may be an uninstall program in an HP folder that it put into your start menu.
Right. The place to look first is always in the folders in the start menu and to see if there's an uninstall there.
Okay, I was going to do Revo, but I don't think I can do that with a driver, right?
I would uninstall it from their system first.
Okay. Okay.
All right?
I'll go ahead and do that. Thanks very much, gentlemen.
There you go, Jerry. Good luck.
And in the Unix world and the Mac world, we have some third-party drivers, Gutenprint, that rely on the common Unix printing system. So if your printer manufacturer has abandoned your OS, it may be possible to get the Gutenprint driver. So we have a lot of people that are using Gutenprint drivers on very old printers on a modern computer because of that.
Right.
And especially the olden days, you know, the original Laser Writers, the original Laser Jet. We had a customer come in the other day. They've got a Laser Jet 4. It's got to be 20 years old, and it still works fine and still pushes out paper.
They were tanks. You could dance on them, and they would keep printing.
Well, because it was a $10,000 printer or something ridiculous back then. Now you can buy and that's part of the problem. Now you can buy a laser printer for $150, and if it works a year, great. You throw it away and buy a new one.
Right.
Yeah.
You might color laser printer for $300.
Yeah, I really want one of those. What I want is a duplexer. I can't get my wife to print on both sides of the paper. And she print a ream of paper a day sometimes when she's printing her book lists out. Both sides of the paper, please.
Right. Well, but then you have to flip them over. That's annoying.
Right. Well, some printers, the jerks, they call it manual duplexing as a feature list. So you print one side of the paper, you manually flip it over, and it prints the other. So it is kind of nice that it prints the even pages. You flip it over, then it prints the odd pages.
Right.
That's manual duplexing. You want a printer that has automatic duplexing in it, which is fun to watch. It spits it out about halfway and then sucks it back in again.
Right. I had a printer that did it all internally.
Yeah.
And every time it sounded like it was mangling the crap out of the paper.
Yeah.
You'd print something, you'd go...
Yep.
The printer would come out, your paper would come out perfect.
Yeah. I remember the early color laser printers would have four toner cartridges, you know, like your inkjet printer has four ink tanks.
Right.
And it would be on a rotating carousel. So it would have to rotate to black and then print the black layer and then rotate to cyan and print the cyan later. And so you were lucky to get four or five pages a minute out of it. Now most of the color laser printers are linear. And so the paper moves back and forth and the toner stays in place. And they can print, you know, 15, 20 pages a minute for that $300. I mean, the first color laser printer we had, in fact, I still remember going to the store at Microwave on Monroe Avenue to play with it because it was $50,000 for a color laser printer.
Yep.
And we'd just go and play. Ooh, color.
How about the old HP color pen printers.
Oh, I loved those.
Yeah.
I loved
those. That was so much fun watching those because it had to go back to the head,
we
grab the color.
We called those a plotter back then.
Yeah, a plotter.
Yeah, those are plotters. I loved those.
And grab the particular pen, draw that section in the color it needed, then go back, grab a different color, come back. That was fun to watch.
You could watch that just for hours.
Yeah, it was very entertaining.
All right, our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit. Listen, we have to stop taking calls from Irondequoit. This is the third time.
Hey, we're going to become the Webster where life is worth living.
Yeah, exactly. This is the third time I have misspelled Irondequoit on this. And I spell it, it's all creative. I have spelled it differently three times. I will fix that. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. Will you be moving to Webster soon so I don't have to write Irondequoit anymore?
Pretty close.
Yeah. What can we do for you?
I'd like to share with you two sites that I use to get free books from my Kindle Fire.
Oh, perfect.
The first one, and I like this one the best, is called freebooksifter.com. And the second one is called bookgorilla.com. You know, you put your email address, and they send you a list. That Free Booksifter, I got, I think, 300 and something books today, and I guess a couple hundred yesterday. It's really neat because they don't cost anything.
Yeah, freebooksifter.com and bookgorilla.com.
Yeah, free book sifter, like you're sifting flour.
Oh, sifter.
S-I-F-T-E-R,
one word. Yeah, okay.
It's really good because with the Kindle Fire, you can use the Kindle for PC. You don't even have to use a Kindle. You can just get the books and download them to your PC and read them anytime you want. I like that feature too.
Right. Yep. I have a Nexus 7 and I have the Kindle reader on that, so I can do that. I can do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, these books they go right to their reader. They're really nice. I mean, this site, both of these sites are terrific, and I just like to share them with you guys because they don't cost anything.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Steve will put those up on the Soundbites website so that people will have them. This is great.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
No, thank you. We appreciate that. This is the kind of thing I love, these little hidden gems that you don't know about that other people do. Some pretty nice stuff. Thanks, Victor. The freebooksifter.com and bookgorilla.com.
And don't forget...
I spelled it wrong, too. I spelled it gorilla, like in war, and it's actually gorilla, like in...
I had gorilla right, but I spelled book wrong. At a T instead of a K, and they're nowhere near each other.
Bootgorilla.com. Yeah. Generally speaking, when you put in a misspelled site, you get porn.
Generally, yeah. That time it was a server not found, which is very strange.
Which is very odd. It's very rare. Apparently, not enough people go to it to do that. Mm-hmm. We used to have that problem at RIT all the time. Whitehouse.gov is the government site for the White House. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, Whitehouse.com was a porn site with lookalikes for politicians. Now, of course, Whitehouse.com redirects you to Whitehouse.gov. But I would get calls from faculty all the time.
I wonder how the government acquired...
Well, right.
So they apparently lost it because now it's a parking site.
Oh, now it's just a parking site.
But a porn parking site.
Of course it is. But for the longest time, my faculty would call me up all the time. There's something wrong with the internet. I took my students to the White House and I ended up on porn. Yeah, because everybody's used to typing .com.
Yeah.
And they did it without thinking and got to whitehouse.com instead of whitehouse.gov.
Judine did the same thing way back when. She was trying to find some sneakers for her husband because she wanted to get him these special sneakers for his birthday. So she typed in Dick's. Yeah, and thinking Dick's Sporting Goods.
Sporting Goods. Yeah. No, that's not going to work.
Yeah, that didn't. I heard a blood-curdling scream way back. This is back when I was on Brighton Henry at a Town Line Road.
Yeah.
She's up at the front of the shop. We're close to 1,000 feet back.
Yep.
And Dan Wally and I heard her as clear as day telling us to get our butts up here right away. She's standing in front of her computer screen. Get that off! Get that off!
Microsoft ran a series of commercials for Internet Explorer 8 for their private browsing feature they added that we always call a porn filter.
Right.
Dean Cain was in one where the wife borrows her husband's computer and sees what's in his browsing history and pukes all over it. And then Dean Cain comes out, you know, it's the OMG IGP. Oh my God, I'm going to puke. So you should use Internet Explorer 8 where you can turn the porn filter on.
Nice. Very, very charming.
They didn't last very long, but these are real Microsoft commercials.
These are real commercials. Well, Microsoft's had a history of very weird commercials.
Yep.
All right, I got a news item that I think our listeners in particular are going to love. The Privacy Phone is a device that Freedom Pop brags is the only smartphone and mobile service that allows for encrypted communications. Lovingly nicknamed the Snowden Phone by Freedom Pop, it can even be purchased with Bitcoin, assuming you still have any Bitcoins, to further protect the owner's anonymity. Simply put, if you're in the market for a phone to plan to help run a criminal enterprise or serially leak ill-gotten government secrets, this is probably the phone for you. Voice and text messages are reportedly locked down with 128-bit encryption. All application and internet data will be sent through a secure, encrypted virtual private network or VPN. And if that's not enough, owners can change the phone's number at any time they want. In light of recent violations in consumers' privacy across social networks and mobile devices, privacy is becoming increasingly important to many Americans, and we all have a right to communicate anonymously, said Steven Cesar, COO at Freedom Pop. Large carriers don't have the flexibility, desire, or creativity to invest in privacy. We don't agree with this approach and felt it was up to us to create a truly private mobile phone service at an affordable price. The phone itself is a Samsung Galaxy 2 and costs $189. No contract. The phone comes with 3 months of unlimited voice and text, plus 500 megabytes of data. Of course, they agree on the data. After 3 months, it's $10 a month, and payments can, of course, be made with Bitcoin through BitPay. Encrypted wireless communication is nothing new. Emails sent through a BlackBerry Enterprise server are encrypted. Several smartphone apps state that they can encrypt a phone's voice calls and data services. As Uncle Ben wisely put it, with great power comes great responsibility. This Freedom Pop device seems to offer unparalleled privacy from all sorts of intrusion. Will it be used by privacy-seeking patriots or bad guys straight out of 24? Probably both, but that's freedom. As Steven Stokel, CEO of Freedom Pop, said, like any new tech, it can be abused. So are you interested in an encrypted phone? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Be nice to Dave when you do call. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And, this is another of my favorite stories here. There were some good ones this week. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office on Thursday published an Apple patent filing describing a unique mobile device feature that can automatically request assistance if it is determined that a user is in distress. Apple's patent application for mobile emergency attack and fail-safe detection covers a software and hardware implementation of an emergency services request system using the one thing almost everyone carries on a day-to-day basis, a smartphone. The filing describes a system that uses a mobile device's onboard sensors to detect a probable emergency situation, such as a physical attack against the user. The system can then automatically request help via cell phone call or other mode of communication. As Apple notes, users may encounter problems or emergency situations while traveling from one place to another. The invention is meant to help assist the user in the case of automobile accidents, muggings, and debilitating medical issues, among other scenarios. First, the system generates an emergency call list from a user's address book or crowdsourced database like local 911 numbers. Alternatively, users may set contact numbers manually. The device can also use its GPS functionality to constantly update the database and, in the case of an emergency, will message the nearest contact on the list. In one embodiment, the system revolves around a user-enabled attack detection mode that, when activated, monitors for certain events. A number of optional sub-modes can be selected to meet a multitude of operating environments. When the system senses a possible attack, It enters a warning mode that counts down to an audible alarm, emergency call, or similar response. To exit the warning mode, the user must interact with the device, perhaps placing their finger on the screen or dead man switch or something, whatever, a disarm code, something like that. So my question, though, is not how cool is this or whatever else it might be. My question is, should Apple make this life-saving technology available to everyone or keep it only for iPhone users?
I'm sure they might license the patent.
Well, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
That's the whole thing that the patent started as a way to protect your investment in research so you could make the product for a while before competitors came along. But it's gotten so bad lately that we actually created a whole new class of company called the patent troll.
Right.
A non-practicing entity.
Exactly.
NPE. So all they do is buy patents and then sue people who they think they are using patents, because some patents have been given such a broad, swath that you can sue for anything these days.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next call. Now, see, I can spell this city. Ed from Ithaca, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Hi. I have a recent problem on my system running XP. I use the standard Windows music player, and it has started now to stay on top and not let me bring other things to the fore.
That's a preference somewhere. Right. A lot of programs have that keep on top option, and we're all both Googling to try to figure out where that option is.
Yeah, but somewhere in the options there is a checkbox that says keep this on top.
Huh. For Windows Media Player?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So, some people like that. So whatever song is playing, you have that little controller down in the corner so you can keep it up and still see. It's most convenient on a large monitor, though, where you have the screen space for it.
And I will tell you that newer operating systems have notification boxes that will tell you what the next song is going to be without having to have that on top.
Okay, I found that in the preferences, and I clicked it, and all is well with the world now.
That's what I like to hear.
So there must be a key combination to accidentally turn that on, because there's so many clicks to turn it off, that's not something you would do accidentally.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right, and Ed, let me ask you, what is your plan to move off XP?
I'm going to stick with it as long as I can.
Yeah, that's 1 month, Ed.
Oh.
After that, it's going to start having holes in it that will not be fixed.
Huh. So what should I do beyond going to Linux, which I know you would recommend?
Well, it depends on what you do with your life. I mean, if most of your work is spent, if most of your time is spent in the browser, maybe you could use a Chromebook. If most of your work time is spent in at the desktop writing code or whatever it is, then you're going to have to move to something that will let you write that code. It might be a Windows machine. It might be a Mac. It might be Linux. But that's such an individual question that I have trouble answering it for people. What I tell people, because I have a Chromebook. I bring it everywhere. And it always engenders exactly the same question. Should I get a Chromebook? And my answer is always, my favorite answer, it depends. My suggestion to people in general is the Chromebook is essentially hardware that runs the Chrome browser and all the add-ons and extensions and stuff that the Chrome browser has. So my suggestion is put the Chrome browser on your desktop or laptop and run solely inside it for a while and see if you can do that. If you're using a mail program that has a web-based interface, then you can get your mail. If you use Google's Drive applications or iCloud applications or live.com applications, you can do word processing and spreadsheet, or Soho Writer or any one of a dozen other places. You can do your word processing and your spreadsheets and your databases and everything else. And most of us do everything else in the browser anyway.
And if you're, Microsoft has the Windows 7 Upgrade Advisor that will tell you if your machine is capable of running Windows 7.
Right.
Without, what usually happens is you need to upgrade your RAM. That's the usual biggest thing. But while you can still get Windows 7, you might want to just download that for free to see if the Windows 7 Upgrade Advisor to see if that if your machine is capable of it. So Windows 7 is very similar in look and feel and function to Windows XP, but it's still being supported probably for a couple more years. And it's not as different as Windows 8 is.
Right. And I don't know if I want to go through learning all those differences at this point. I'm also concerned about using Google just because they collect so much information on everybody. That's made me really leery.
Right. You do. You are aware they don't actually collect information about you.
They
collect aggregate information, right. Which is to say they know 200,000 people went to this website, not that Ed from Ithaca, New York went to this website. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, I'll think about those things and figure out what to do. Thank you so much for all the help that you do for everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
We're really getting to the point where in particular Windows XP people have to realize the danger they will be in a month. And, 40 days, actually? You had a countdown clock up earlier, but something like 40 days. And
just over 30 days.
Oh, just over 30. Okay. But so you really have a decision to make as to where you're going to go. And I know a lot of people are enticed. Oh, 30 days, 9 hours, blah, blah, blah. I know a lot of people are enticed by Chromebooks because they're so inexpensive.
Yeah.
But they are a different way of working. I think, a terrific way of working in certain circumstances.
Right.
You know, I know people who never leave the browser.
Yeah, you can play.
They're perfect candidates. Yeah, you want to play your Candy Crush or your Castleville or your whatever. And you're doing everything all day in the browser anyway. You're a perfect candidate for a Chromebook. But if you spend a lot of time in other programs and can't find equivalents, I have found video editors.
Yeah.
I have found graphic editors, all free.
We were talking about Quicken earlier. Quicken has an online component.
Right. And so you can do all of those things online. In fact, you're better off doing those things online because those are always up to date.
Right.
There's never a point at which you're suddenly using a 10-year-old product to try to do your taxes. That's really not going to work. But so many things are available as an online service nowadays. And yes, you will pay for that. But it's not terribly expensive, but you have to pay it, you know, kind of all the time. And so if you're the sort of person who uses nothing but web stuff, then a Chromebook could suit your needs. But if you're the sort of person who game players, certainly heavy game players, you know, if you're a Call of Duty person or a Skyrim person or whatever, obviously you have to have a very high-end machine to play those things.
And you're probably using a game console anyway.
And you might be using a game console anyway. But you don't have quite the same needs for the average user as you do for those high-end game players. Or maybe you run a bunch of databases for people or that sort of fare. Maybe that, you know, that's separate. That's a different thing. But if you're just an average user who spends their entire day in a browser, or because a lot of people are looking to buy those inexpensive machines now, and that's pretty nice. But again, a new inexpensive PC or a lower end Mac may suit you. There aren't very many low end Macs anymore, but suit you.
It's a higher low end.
Yeah, right. Exactly. right. May suit you. But again, you need to be aware, as Steve said earlier, if you buy a $300 computer, you can't expect it's going to last 10 years because it's not.
Yep.
You know, if you bought a $300 car, you'll be dancing for joy if you get a winner out of it.
I know a guy that does that. He buys cars every 6-10 months. You know, he buys a $300 or $400 car, and he still pays less than we do. His car payment is less. His insurance payments are less.
Yep.
And he always has a different car, so it's new to him.
It's new to him. But yeah, you will find that that $300 laptop, it's just it's never going to last you as long as a $1,200 laptop. It's just not going to happen. Not that a $1,200 laptop is going to last you all that long either anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody's using the cheapest components they can find because that's how they make money. You know, when your margins on a system are, you know, 3%, getting 3.01% is a big deal. So we see that a lot, unfortunately, but that's the way that is. And we should probably, how much time we got before the break? 2 minutes? I should talk about the Netflix tech support scam. I can't even talk today. Jerome Segura has been tracking tech support scams for a year, documenting the ploys he's encountered, but even this one found him unprepared. Combining a phishing scam with a fake tech support call center is something I've never seen before, the Malwarebytes senior security researcher said. A video of the find shows Segura trying to enter a fake Netflix login on the streaming service's homepage, only to be presented with a notice telling him the account has been suspended and telling him to call a fake tech support number. He dutifully called it up and was asked to download Netflix support software, which was really the remote control software TeamViewer, which allowed the scammer to access his system. Once hopped on, the hacker tells Segura he's been hacked, which is true at this point.
They usually don't tell you, though. They try to string you along as long as possible.
Well, he says he's been hacked 9 times. One's coming from Serbia.
Oh yeah.
Four coming from Russia. Three are coming from China.
It's not
one's
him
coming from Italy.
It's not him hacking you. It's other people.
It's other people hacking you. It's all part of a tactic to instill fear and get the user to comply. Like when the helpful voice on the other end of the phone showed him a scan of apparent hacker activity, which is really a custom-made Windows batch script. By running their own tool, which looks authentic, the crooks can detect problems that do not exist, says Segura. Finally, showing those scan results adds to the fear factor, as well as creating a sense of urgency to fix the issue. As well as scraping plenty of personal information from Segura's system, including a file named Banking 2013, the scammers continued to attempt to get a payment of $389.97. That include, by the way, the generous $50 Netflix discount.
Nice.
That's nice of them. For Microsoft support to fix the problem. And the problem, of course, happened because his security software not up to scratch.
Well, these are hard to catch because it's not, technically, it's not a virus. It's not a searchable thing.
Right.
It's an ad tricking you into doing something.
Right. Well, in this case, it was a fake Netflix page.
Yeah.
One of those you misspell the word Netflix,
yeah,
and you get a fake logon page, which looks just like the Netflix logon page. You log on, two things happen. First, they've got your Netflix logon.
And they can watch all your movies.
And they watch all your movies, I suppose. But secondly,
and you probably use that same password on other sites.
Exactly. And secondly, they now show you a page that says, oh, your account is suspended, so please call this number. So they, and now, of course, you call that number. Now you're paying by the minute to call that number. And they're going to extort $400 out of you to fix problems. You, I love these guys. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites. Member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Moment of silence. Not something you want to do often on the radio.
Hmm.
But Radio Shack said on Tuesday, it will close up to a fifth of its nearly 5,200 U.S. stores amid widening losses in an effort to remake itself for a more competitive era of electronics retailing. Up to 1,100 poorly performing stores are slated for closure, but the company did not identify their locations, set a deadline, or say how many employees will be affected. The company must negotiate with landlords and seek approval from lenders before carrying out its plan. Radio Shack has been trying to revamp its stores for the past year. Yet some analysts say the retailer faces an uphill climb as it struggles to compete against larger big box stores such as Best Buy.
Mm-hmm.
In the fourth quarter, the company lost $191.4 million. For the year, the company lost about $400 million. "We are trying to do too much too quickly to turn around the company," Radio Shack CEO Joseph Magnacca told analysts in a conference call. Among other problems, he said the company cut some product lines too deeply and didn't have enough in-demand products in stock. The closures will affect lower-performing stores that were expected to lose money over the next year. He said the company is overstored in some markets. with multiple outlets within miles of each other. Yeah, we all agree the company has to shut down its worst performing stores to stay afloat. But the closings will, I think, partially negate their chief competitive advantage, which is convenient locations.
Right. How many do they have, and how easy it is to get there?
Right. You have to pass a Radio Shack to get to the grocery store, and so you stop. But if that Radio Shack is gone, are you going to drive to another Radio Shack? Or just pick up your batteries at the grocery store.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, Magnacca said the company's turnaround hinges largely on a knowledgeable sales force that big box retailers typically lack, who can guide customers through a bewildering array of electronic devices. Over the past year, Radio Shack has opened about 24 concept stores that support open gleaming designs and let customers interact with products. Where have we seen that before? It plans to roll out such outlets more widely. He said Radio Shack wants to parlay such assets to sell solutions in an increasingly complex environment in which mobile phones, tablets, and other devices are often linked. They also want to roll out a more private label product such as headphones and speakers. So when was the last time you were in a Radio Shack? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
You know when their big heyday was? Actually, within the past few decades, though, was the 70s with the CB radio.
I don't remember the 70s. CB,
I know. You can remember them. You weren't there. But no, I remember with the CB radios and the ham radios going there for a lot of our parts and everything else, because I was into ham radio and the CB radios.
Used to go there all the time for electronic components.
Oh, yeah. I can,
now their component section is a little tiny thing in the back.
I can remember as a teenager, and that's many decades ago, going in there to get a radio.
Yeah.
A decent size clock radio. Because I needed one because I got a paper route and that, and I needed to get up and wanted to listen to music and that, and wound up going over and getting this brown, wooden-looking, like, radio. And it worked great. And I thought, oh, I'm the elite here. I've got clock radio.
Yep. Yeah, and I remember buying tubes.
Yeah, oh yes.
At Radio Shack. I remember buying diodes. I remember building a crystal radio.
They used to have the tube tester.
Yes, loved that. But I also remember buying kits, which Radio Shack was famous for, the Heath kits.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes.
And I remember buying. I built a crystal radio. I built a ham set. I built several different things, and I've still got the. The scars from dripped.
My hands were never steady enough to do soldering.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my brother, he sickens me. Back in the day when we had to put the memory sticks in, and they had all those little individual little pins, the little fine wire ones.
Yeah.
People would break off those ends that would hold the the clip in to hold, because once you got the memory in, you had to snap it in. Well, people would constantly break off those ends. Well, my brother works in electronics. He'd come over, and he could take out the motherboard, flip it over. he could undo all 128 connectors. And these are paper thin. I mean, these are very fine. Get them all cleaned off, suck them all out, pull out the old part, put in the new, resolder it just like brand new, like it was at the factory.
Nice.
And I said, whoa, you're good.
And it usually takes a robot to do that.
And he can sit there with such precision. It's unbelievable.
I had a friend I worked with, and if he's listening, he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I come into the store one day, and I hear swearing in the back room. Every once in a while, as I'm walking toward the back, I'm figuring, what's going on back here? I walk in the back. He's soldering. It's dead summer, and in the back of our store is like 150 degrees, so he's in shorts and a T-shirt. And he's dripping solder on his leg. And he's so involved in what he's doing, he doesn't even think to move his leg or do that. So I grabbed a cloth and just draped it over his leg.
Yep. Jeez. But why is there an L in solder?
Right.
We don't pronounce it solder, do we?
No, we don't. Should be two D's. Solder.
Yeah. Yep.
Except I think that's a Cockney slang thing, so maybe not. That's a different story.
Yeah.
But we don't use solder. We don't use flux. We don't use soldering irons anymore. Yep.
What's your name?
None of that.
We still have one at our office that we use very rarely because it's so uncommon to re-solder components. You just replace the whole board. Yep.
Well, that's exactly right.
We had a guy, the young puppy in our office, that was making jokes about the flux capacitor, and he didn't get the reference. I mean, that's a relatively new movie.
I think Chris is going to work with me.
All right. Yep. Our next caller is Vic from North Chi-Lai, New York. Welcome, Vic. What's up?
Well, not much. Just wanted to bring up the fact that back in the old days, in the late 60s, early 70s, Radio Shack was actually Tandy Leather, a company of Leather Craftsman that eventually got into selling electronic parts.
Yep, the Tandy computer, yeah.
Well, I used to buy Tandy leather stuff. I used to do, when I was a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout, we used to do leather work, and we would buy all the leather and all the punches and awls and all that stuff, all from Tandy. You're absolutely right. And eventually Tandy broke off from Radio Shack, and you would have Tandy leather stores and Radio Shacks.
I remember that, yes.
It was interesting that a leather store would decide to get into electronics.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's what made money.
Yep.
And then the other thing, of course, was, you're right, the Tandy computers, the TRS-80.
Yep.
The Coco.
Oh, the Trash 80. That was the first one I got onto to learn to program BASIC.
We used to write
the big 8-inch floppy disk.
Yeah, we used to write games for it, but it didn't have a sound card back then.
Right.
But you put a detuned AM radio next to the computer, and there was so much radio interference coming off the computer. We figured out how to make explosion sounds for our games. We figured out how to make phaser sounds out of it, but by putting the right things in memory. Yeah.
Yep.
No, if they kept Tandy leather, they could have made, briefcases for their laptops, you know?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Well, now, Samsung just announced that they have a new Chromebook with simulated leather case. So it's got stitching, and it's got the feel of leather.
Apparently Tandy leather's still around. I don't know if that's the same Tandy.
Well, it's certainly, they've taken the name. It's the same.
Established 1919. Yeah, it is the same.
Yep. Not only that, it's the same logo. So clearly, nice.
Well, I enjoy calling you guys.
Thank you, Vic. We appreciate it. I remember. Remember Boondoggles?
Boondoggle, yeah.
We used to make them out of leather because we would go get pieces of leather from Tandy Leather, and we would cut them into
little strips.
And then
weave
boondoggle them together.
Yeah, the boondoggle weave.
Yep.
Whether you were doing square, round, braided.
Yep.
Well, I can remember.
Or the twisty ones and all that stuff. Oh, yeah.
The curlicue.
That was one of those things that that was a skill you had to have.
I can remember because my dad worked at Keys Drug.
Uh-huh.
And he'd bring me home some. I'd ask him, when he goes to work, please bring me home some boondoggle.
The plastic stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And on Sunday afternoons, we'd sit there while we listened to the radio.
Yep.
And I'd sit there and do boondoggle.
Yep. I can't tell you how
stuff
many
you had
millions
to do at camp
of those.
All the time.
What?
The stuff you had to do at camp all the time that was completely useless, but kept you out of the counselor's hair.
It wasn't useless because you could give them away at Christmas.
Yeah.
You saved them for an entire 6 months after camp in order to give them away at Christmas. All right, that music tells me we've successfully wasted 2 hours of your life. We want to thank every single one of you called in. We want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Seriously, call earlier next time. Don't wait until 5 minutes before the hour to call, because as you can see, we're ending the show.
The Apple Cider Meeting is...
Apple Cider Meeting.
Wednesday, 7 o'clock. We're going to be doing virtualization and some stuff from CES highlights.
Very nice. All right. So put that on your calendars. You can go to applecider.org and see it there. And we're done for another week. For Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks for listening. It's Sound Bites right here on the truly great and truly
member-supported
Jazz 90.1. See you next week.